How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Very warm welcome to another edition of The Tottenham Way. I'm Marcus Buckland. In the middle of quite a quiet week from a Tottenham point of view, a strange lack of headlines, be they positive or negative, as we head towards the penultimate game of the season. Many eyes focused, of course, on Europe and other sporting issues. But Tom Allnut of The Times is here with me to chew the fat. Shortly, we're going to be joined by a top German, he's actually German, but I call him German, top German sports commentator and broadcaster, Konstantin Eckner, who will give us a very interesting insight, I think, into the likes of Julian Nagelsmann and what went on there, Xavi Alonso, and whether he is a possibility as Tottenham's next manager. We'll also discuss the director of football situation with him. But, Tom, first things first, how are you? What's going on?
Hi, Marcus. It's quite a week, isn't it, for Spurs? I mean, I guess all relative. They're still looking for a manager, a director of football. We're still, you know, wondering about Harry Kane. But apart from that, all quiet on the North London front.
And what we are still doing is celebrating Brighton's magnificent performance at Arsenal at the weekend. There was a part of me, because I'm definitely one of those who want Spurs to get into Europe at the highest possible level. So there was a small part of me, bizarrely, that wanted Arsenal actually to win that game on the assumption that they were never going to actually catch Manchester City. But the way Brighton played was just incredible, and of course has merely strengthened all the adulation surrounding Roberto De Zerbi at the moment. So it was an extraordinary afternoon, really, Tom. Brighton are some team, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it felt like a sort of ideal situation for Spurs fans, really, where either result kind of had its merits, didn't it? I mean, you know, either Arsenal really blew the title or Brighton, you know, their ambitions for Europe kind of took a knock. So, and to be fair, you know, I think Spurs fans have had it so rough this season for so long that I wouldn't deny them any kind of the rare pleasures, even when it comes with a completely different team. I mean, if you think about the highlights of Tottenham's season, it probably literally is Arsenal being beaten by Brighton, Arsenal being beaten by Manchester City, and then somewhere down there, sort of Kane's record or something. And after that, there's not much else to get excited about, is there? But I think Brighton have been arguably the team of the season. I mean, I think Arsenal, you know, are obviously up there, but the way Brighton play and for Tottenham, you know, in the context of De Zerbi, I mean, if you were watching that match and seeing how Brighton played, you know, one of the best teams in Europe off the park, with a very modern, pressing, high-octane style of football, passing the ball with confidence, playing it out from the back, creating chances. And then you look at the team full of young players who are playing with huge amount of confidence. Two or three players who I think we would all kind of say aren't necessarily the most, you know, fantastic technical footballers, people like Lewis Dunk, etc., still playing out of their skin. How could you look at that match and not think we would love to have a manager like this? You know, I mean, I do think De Zerbi sort of lost a little bit of kudos with the way he sort of behaved in that match against Spurs a few weeks ago. But if you
that's forgiven. That's forgiven as far forgiven. As I'm concerned.
Yeah, forget about that. I mean, I think if you look at the way he's developed this Brighton team in such a short space of time, I think, you know, he's obviously a hugely talented manager. And there are some reservations, you know, in a serious point. There are some reservations at Spurs about his fiery personality. But, you know, in my personal point of view is, why not? You know, why not have a manager like that? I mean, you know, it was part of the positive thing about Conte was his sort of passion on the touchline, the way he used to fire up his players and his team. And okay, when that transferred into the press conference room, maybe that wasn't quite such a great thing for Spurs. But, you know, I think we said a few weeks ago, you know, that when Spurs started this kind of manager search, the likes of Tuchel, who's available at that time, then obviously Nagelsmann became available. You know, you'd have to look at those kind of guys with their record and their CV if they were interested. And then you have the Pochettino kind of conundrum on the side. But after that, you know, I think we all agree that De Zerbi was right up there, you know, and I think he should be very much a coach they consider in the summer very strongly. The question really now is, does he consider Spurs to be the kind of job he would want? Because, I mean, I was in Milan this week for the Inter versus AC semi-final. And even there, you know, people were talking, Italian journalists were kind of talking about De Zerbi and as a possible successor to Pioli at AC Milan, for example. You know, they're very much aware of his progress and what he's achieved this season. And who knows whether he sees Italy as his calling or whether he sees the Premier League as the place to be. I don't know. But I think Spurs should be very much looking to find out.
Yeah, I do wonder whether already he's now beyond Tottenham's grasp. Every day that goes by, Maurizio Pochettino is not unveiled as the Chelsea head on that thinks, oh, maybe something's gone wrong behind the scenes. There's going to be an extraordinary twist in the tale. I'm in dreamland, aren't I, as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? I mean, I guess, you know, Chelsea stealing Willian on the kind of the last day and this kind of thing, it has been done before, but not necessarily this way round. I mean, the logical kind of journalist response is that everything is done, you know, and that they're literally just waiting to sign the papers, and that really Chelsea, it's a matter of timing. You know, Pochettino doesn't see there as being any rush, and neither did Chelsea. There's this kind of a sense of not wanting to disrespect Frank Lampard's authority in his position. I think they will announce it soon, and that perhaps Pochettino will be sort of unveiled perhaps on the last day of the season at Stamford Bridge, that kind of thing. There's nothing to suggest so far that there's going to be a sort of dramatic fairy tale U-turn. Spurs, you know, as has been said before, haven't even contacted Pochettino directly. They didn't see him as a candidate. I mean, I don't know how you feel, Marcus. I mean, you know, does Pochettino in a Chelsea dugout, does that rule out him ever coming back to the club? You know, as a fan yourself, do you feel like this is tainting his legacy, or what's your...
No, I have to say, I've seen a few people on Twitter going, oh, he's now in the same boat as Sol Campbell. There's no comparison whatsoever. He, from what we understand, would have been very, very interested in a return to Tottenham. And if Tottenham, as we appear to know, have not made any contact with him, then he's totally within his rights to find another club. He's a football manager. He's got to have a job. And it's not ideal, but I don't harbour a grudge against him. And the other thing, of course, is that we do tend to pick up ex-Chelsea managers, so it's absolutely fine. He can hopefully ruin them for a couple of years, and then we'll have him back at Tottenham. So I obviously it's not ideal, and certainly if he was to suddenly start tinkering around and asking Harry Kane to come and join him at Stamford Bridge, for example, that would become toxic. But I, in essence, do not have a problem with it, because I really feel as though he was waiting for the opportunity to come back to Spurs. And when that didn't happen, being a manager, he has to do what's right for him. Would you agree with that?
I think as well, you know, you have to think about the landscape for a coach like Pochettino, who only really is interested in maybe half a dozen jobs, you know, in the world. You know, we're looking at kind of the top six in the Premier League, if you like, plus Newcastle. We're thinking about Bayern Munich, two or three Italian clubs, Real Madrid, you know, and those are the clubs who he would want to be managing now. And I think that sounds like a long list, but obviously you can very quickly tick off a few of those and rule them out, because they have managers who are going to be there next season. Some of them, you know, there's rivalries or whatever, the situation isn't there. And Pochettino knows from the last few years that time can very quickly drift by when you're waiting for the perfect job, you know, and he obviously has a link to London. He loves the Premier League. He loves England, but he can't be that choosy. I mean, you know, he can't wait around for the job that satisfies Tottenham fans and also satisfies him and his coaching staff, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I don't blame him at all.
I mean, obviously, Tom, if Spurs had come calling and he said no for whatever reason and then gone to Chelsea, that also would be a very different situation. But you're absolutely right. You know, he's not getting on exactly, but you can sit there dreaming, as we all do sometimes in life, waiting for the ideal job to come, and it doesn't. So you've got to eventually embrace what is being offered to you. And Chelsea's a fantastic challenge at the moment, just purely from a neutral point of view. I mean, obviously, they've signed the whole world, and it'll be an intriguing summer for him. But it's still a club that has got so many, you know, opportunities down the line, isn't
it? It'll be interesting, I think. I mean, you mentioned, you know, if Chelsea kind of come sniffing around Kane, that kind of thing. I don't see that happening. But equally, I think the wider point is true. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the football in the next year. You know, what happens when Pochettino goes back to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium now? You know, do they sing his name on the touchline? Do they give him a sort of respectful round of applause? How does he behave? Does he give the fans a salute, or does he kind of ignore them and say, I'm the Chelsea manager now? How do the press conferences work out in before those games? When Chelsea are challenging Spurs for fourth spot next season, you know, and someone gets sent off, what does Pochettino say? These kind of things can affect the narrative. I think it's easy to say now, Pochettino will always be, you know, in Tottenham's hearts, and hopefully, you know, he'll destroy Chelsea and come back in 3 or 4 years, etc. That is very possible. But we saw during the rivalry between Chelsea and Tottenham how it can work, you know, the other way around. You know, people, you know, emotions run high, and it will only take a couple of matches and a couple of eye gouges, and suddenly everything can feel a little less neat and tidy. So let's see. I mean, I think it's an interesting watch. And I mean, as you say, Chelsea is a huge challenge, and I think Pochettino will have his handful turning that team.
Yeah. And the final thing I would say on that is that, you know, I was not one of those advocating a return for Pochettino a couple of months or so ago. For me, it was always Thomas Tuchel, first of all. And of course, he quickly fell out of the running. But I still do remember, and it wasn't necessarily all his own fault, but the last few months of the Pochettino era were depressing. And perhaps the worst thing that could happen now, if Pochettino had decided to come back or been offered the chance to come back and it hadn't worked out second time around, then that somewhat sullies everything that went before. So perhaps it's for the best for everyone. And I totally get your point that, yeah, the way football works, a couple of feisty derbies between the two sides, a bit of controversy, and there'll be no love lost. But I think the respect will always be there. Excuse me, I'm not crying. I'm just swallowing on a peanut I just had. So it's going to be fascinating to work out, but clearly he's not coming back. But there have been some other names mentioned of late, and I'm very pleased to say that we are now, Tom, joined by the top German sports commentator and broadcaster Konstantin Eckner, who has his ear to the ground as far as all Bundesliga matters are concerned. I'm slightly worried, though, because it's Man's Day in Germany, which is a very special and potentially drunken holiday. So, Konstantin, welcome. Lovely to have you on the podcast. How are you? And what is Man's Day all about?
I'm good. No, just kidding. Yeah, I mean, it's like Father's Day or Man's Day. It's also about the resurgence of Jesus Christ. I think that's also kind of the more religious background of that day in Germany. But it's a holiday in Germany. First day after Mother's Day, which was on Sunday. Then all the males get their day a couple of days later, and which is usually like the day where everyone is just getting drunk on beer, usually.
Well, I've got to say, Tom, I'm rather keen to move across to Germany just as soon as possible, having heard about that.
Sounds good, yeah. We've imported, you know, good German academy coaching, pressing. Now we can also import German Man's Day as well into our calendar, yeah. Much better than kind of coronation bank holidays we have to put up with, yeah.
Yeah, there is a slight difference in that. The one thing that we are pretty sure we're not going to be importing is Julian Nagelsmann to Tottenham. There may yet be a German connection. We'll come on to Xavi Alonso in a moment. But Konstantin, from your perspective, what went on, if anything, between Spurs and Nagelsmann in terms of those negotiations?
I mean, if we can call it negotiations, after all, when Nagelsmann was sacked by Bayern. Technically, he wasn't sacked, but, you know, he was just removed from his post. He's still on the contract with Bayern, by the way. That's kind of something people have to keep in mind when it comes to his next destination, because Bayern have been under contract for the next 3 years, so they can always put a stop on everything that goes on, right? But when he was removed from his post, dismissed, whatever, Chelsea called him right away, basically, because, I mean, it coincided with Antonio Conte with Graham Potter also being sacked by Chelsea. Sorry, I got that mixed up for a moment there.
To mix up the Chelsea and Tottenham managers. They are very much constantly interchanging. So
exactly. And also, like, there's too much change for my liking, to be honest. Like, I mean, put a break on that. Like, you know, at least do it like United, like every 2 years or so, right? But all kidding aside, like, of course, Graham Porter was then let go by Chelsea, and they called Nagelsmann right away, which he should have done. I mean, that's kind of what you have to do, right? Due diligence, basically. And there were a couple of calls between these two parties, but Nagelsmann decided to not go ahead, advance to more serious negotiations with Chelsea because Todd Boehly, I think he wasn't really too fond of like the way business is conducted right now at Chelsea, because it's so confusing, to be honest, like from the outside. And I think even for a top tier manager like Nagelsmann, he was also approached by Spurs. To be honest, he and his agent just recently confirmed that actually that he considered Chelsea to be the preferred destination if he goes to the Premier League right now. Of course, I mean, because like Liverpool, United, City are locked up, right? Arsenal also. So in terms of like, where could be a post available for him? He preferred Chelsea. Then he dropped out of negotiations or of talks with Chelsea, out of these talks. And there was some feeling out process from Spurs and towards Nagelsmann, but he wasn't really convinced that Tottenham would be his next destination. Let's be honest. I think what I have gathered, I mean, his agency and his camp is very is quite shielding him right now. I think because that the whole being sacked by Bayern came so sudden, and there is a lot of, I think, also hurt feelings right now. And also Nagelsmann's agent is not really happy about the media coverage. Especially in Germany, but just in general. So they are shielding him right now. But what I have gathered is from people who know Nagelsmann and have a bit of an inside look, that he wasn't sure about like what's the future of Tottenham, the immediate future. Like what's next year? What's coming? Is Harry Kane still there? How is the team looking? How much money can they actually invest? Will they play internationally, etc., etc.? And then at that point, he wasn't really considering going to Tottenham at this point in time. So, I mean, of course, I know that the rumor started, but one report we saw by Sky Sports Germany basically saying that they are in serious negotiations. He considers Tottenham a big club. That was false. I mean, it wasn't true. I mean, it was just not true. I mean, that was just guesswork, I guess. But that was it.
Constantine, I mean, there are some suggestions that he was, you know, not very taken with the sort of more specifics of the role, you know, the fact that Tottenham don't have a director of football, that maybe some of the finances would be difficult. Do you think it was those kind of specific things that was the problem, that Daniel Levy wasn't prepared to promise him enough money? Or do you think it was a broader issue with Tottenham as a club, that maybe it's not a big enough project for him, that maybe he's looking for a bigger role like Real Madrid or something like that? Where do you think the kind of the emphasis was on his decision?
Yeah, I think the latter. You also have to think about the perception of Tottenham in Germany. Because Nagelsmann, born in Bavaria, has only ever worked, played, and coached in Germany. So he has that German perspective, of course. And Tottenham is right now, and that might change, but right now it's considered more of the club behind the big ones. You know, I once compared Tottenham. I know some Spurs fans might not have taken that kindly, but I've compared them a bit to Bayer Leverkusen, a club with potential, always getting some interesting prospects, good players. You know, have some money or have some funding, have financial resources, but are still always like the behind Bayern and Dortmund and maybe Leipzig in Germany, or in terms of in case of Tottenham, behind Pool City, United, and yeah, you can argue about Arsenal, by the way, and then Chelsea, but you know where I'm getting to. So the perception is Tottenham are always a bit behind. Then there's a big question mark surrounding Harry Kane, because Nagelsmann a few months ago was still Bayern coach, and Bayern have seriously discussed internally, can we make an approach and maybe get Harry Kane? You know, because Bayern are looking for number nine. they don't have right now because Lewandowski left and Sadio Mane, that whole experiment, maybe making him the new number nine, didn't work out. So they are right now again discussing who could we get? Is this Victor Osimhen from Napoli, or is it maybe, you know, Harry Kane or someone else? But of course, the name Harry Kane is often mentioned then. So that was in his mind, right? You know, like the best player, the most magnifying player, the Mr. Tottenham in a sense, especially looking from the outside, he might be gone when I'm arriving. It's like not really something I want to have. And then of course, yeah, as you also mentioned, I mean, that there are a lot of question marks revolving around, like, how much can Tottenham invest? Who is actually calling the shots? Because Daniel Levy, with all due respect, he's not a football person, so to speak. I compare that maybe to Borussia Dortmund with Hans-Joachim Watzke, the chief executive, who's a great businessman, but he isn't really like a football insider. And, you know, he shouldn't be the one assessing players and making the decision. All right, we take this left back because he's more talented than the other one. I mean, that's not really what Daniel Levy should do, I think. So yeah, there were a lot of question marks, and also the entire perception of Tottenham is still, is it actually a big club, or could I also be as Nagelsmann, could I maybe face a situation where I'm then being relegated to being a mid-table coach? Because, I mean, he's in a difficult spot, and I've talked about it on various programs. At 35, he already coached Bayern Munich. He is from Bavaria. He lived in Munich a long time before that, actually. He played for the city rivals, and he played for Augsburg, which is close to Munich. So he got his dream job, basically, or maybe from a German perspective, his dream job at like 34, 33. And now he's let go. The dream job is over. And now you have to reassess your entire life, basically. Like, what's next? Because usually, I mean, especially in the coaching world, you get to your dream job when you are 40, 45, 50, maybe. But he got there very early. And now he thinks, all right, I have to keep up. I have to stay at that level, meaning Real Madrid, Barcelona, Paris, whatever, right? But that's like kind of the Champions League contender level.
Yeah, well, I can understand that those points you've made are all extremely fair. With regard to Daniel Levy, there are a lot of things that he probably shouldn't do, a few things we'd like him to do. All those question marks that you've raised with regards to Tottenham are absolutely fair. And the other point I think that's clear and will be in Levy's mind as well, they need to appoint a manager who really, really does want to go to Tottenham. We don't have a repeat of Antonio Conte, who we felt, oh, we're lucky to have him. No, this has got to be somebody who must want to be at the club. And if Nagelsmann didn't, you can understand why those negotiations didn't develop. Now, another possibility from the Bundesliga is Xavi Alonso, who has been saying in the past couple of days, or certainly intimating, that he's got no intention of leaving. So what's the situation regarding him? Do you think it is a realistic possibility that he could still go to Tottenham during the summer?
I don't believe so. I've followed Xabi Alonso's coaching career, actually, even throughout his years at Real San Sebastian B, when he coached the reserve team. Because I just checked out this game. I wanted to see what kind of coach he is, because I'm think he's like the perfect player turned coach type of figure. I think he was already kind of a coach when he played back in the day, in a sense, right? He was like that field general, basically. And so I was always fascinated with him, because I thought, like, if there's one player who should be a coach, it's Xabi Alonso, to be honest. I mean, of course, it might not work out. I mean, Frank Lampard, look, or Andrea Pirlo. I mean, it's not like every, like, great deep-lying playmaker, yeah, a field general has to be a great coach after all. But I think with Xabi Alonso, he also had, like, kind of this aura as like, being a leader. So I followed him during his Real San Sebastian days, where he actually got the promotion to the La Liga 2, to the second division, which is possible as a reserve team. And he is very patient, I think, because some of these guys, like Andrea Pirlo, they just jump right in after their career and right away, or Frank Lampard right away, they, like, 2 years after retirement, they have like a head coaching job at like a big club. What he did, he was first at Real Madrid's youth academy for a little while. He coached some youth teams there, you know, did some internships, basically. Then he got to Real San Sebastian. He stayed 3 years there. And there were approaches, like Borussia Mönchengladbach, for instance, the Bundesliga side. I mean, still a side that can play internationally, right? They approached him, but no, he wanted to stay there. He wanted to Honuscroft at a level where he couldn't do any damage, to be honest. I mean, what could go wrong in the reserve team for in San Sebastian, right? Real Sociedad. So and then he now is at Bayer Leverkusen. And what I have gathered from people at Leverkusen is that he feels like, all right, I should stay one more year here. I haven't even coached an entire season at Leverkusen. I should stay here, coach another season. We will play internationally if everything goes well. Maybe they are all reaching the Europa League final. I don't know when a podcast comes out. I mean, it will be Thursday night, of course, against Roma. There is a fair chance that Bayer Leverkusen beat them and go to the Europa League final. So, I mean, that's a big achievement. They have what also is Leverkusen are now starting to invest more money. They will get Granit Xhaka, most likely. They have already signed Alejandro Grimaldo, the left-back from Benfica, who's, in my opinion, one of the 10, maybe 15 best left-backs in the world. So, I mean, that's a big signing. He was probably also sought after by a lot of our clubs in Italy and so on. So I think right now he believes, just stay here another year. I'm patient. I'm 40, or 41. I mean... What he still looks like he's 30. Like he hasn't changed a bit. It's very weird. He also is always taking part in training. By the way, he's always playing in training sessions. He's still like keeping up with the guys, and also he, in my opinion, will end up at either Liverpool, or Real Madrid, or Bayern Munich. One of the three clubs he played for, where he left his mark, where people just adore him to an extent. Right, he's adored at Liverpool. He's adored at Real Madrid, and even Bayern, even though he only stayed for years there at the tail end of his career, right? Still, people still talk about Xabi Alonso there, right? Like I think he's very charming. He's also kind of good looking, so I think like people are somehow mesmerized by him a little bit. But I think he just wants to wait and see what opens up. I mean, who knows what will happen to Jürgen Klopp at Liverpool, for instance? Maybe in a year we will talk about Jürgen Klopp just calling it a day, at least at Liverpool, because they are in a bit of a difficult spot right now. And then Xabi Alonso, it might be his time to chime in and take over Liverpool after he has still like kind of developed as a coach. Because right now, I also maybe now speaking from the like Tottenham Hotspur's point of view, I don't know if he's really right now at that level where he can coach up Tottenham. Because what he does with Leverkusen is very basic transition football, basic press, basic high press, middle press, and then transition football. He has Moussa Diaby, Jeremy Frimpong, and Florian Wirtz, three fast-paced players who can just hit you on the break no matter when. They, you know, free at night, they can still hit you on the break. So he has to develop a bit more as a coach also. Because what would do that good if he comes to Tottenham and then he just doesn't do any... Well, it doesn't improve the team, but just, you know, it's just a so-so experience, so-so period of time for him and for the club. So I think others might be also further down in their development. I mean, if you talk about Slot and others.
Yeah, well, again, Constantine, that's a lot of very good reasons I will not go. Of course, the other issue with Spurs is the for a director of football. And that's why we did think that Xabi Alonso, along with Tim Steiten, who've worked together in Germany, deal pick. You get two for the price of one, as it were. So just tell us a little bit about him and whether he could at least tick one box for Tottenham in the summer.
Yeah, first of all, it's kind of fascinating these days that like these guys like Christopher Vivell, who's now at Chelsea, right? And now Tim Steiten, who has been at Werder Bremen and Bayer Leverkusen, that they are so sought after by Premier League clubs because like they are not the big rigs in Germany, to be honest. I mean, they are respected, right? But they are backroom staffers, or not backroom, but they work more behind the scenes, right? They are not like front center and like giving television interviews or something like that. So Tim Steiten, he started out at Werder Bremen, was like kind of the head of scouting, basically, like the guy who put the squad together. Then he moved over to Bayer Leverkusen in 2019. And he has done a good job at discovering talents like Tapsoba, Hinkapi, even Florian Wirtz from Cologne in a sense. Although, I mean, you couldn't really miss Florian Wirtz when he was at under 17 level because like he was just tremendous. Steiten has been linked with Chelsea. So it could also be the case that he might be another director there. Could like work alongside Vivell. That's a possibility, but I think there's a greater chance to get him, and maybe if he's promised to be like the man in charge at Tottenham, and he actually gets resources, he gets financial resources, he gets a budget, and he is allowed to find players and sign them. He gets some autonomy, some independence, right? And he doesn't have to knock on Daniel Levy's door every day. And then I think he might be intrigued by that. He was at Leverkusen. He wasn't the shot caller at Leverkusen. That is Simon Rolfes, by the way, the former German international, and Rudi Völler for a long time. So it would be a step up for him. And I think that might be something that would intrigue him. It would be the next step. But I'm just so... Because there's also Manga from Frankfurt, who was like the not really the officer on command. There's Vivell, there's now Steiten. Like all these guys who are working behind the scenes in Germany are now sought after by Premier League clubs. But also, I mean, I think the Premier League just appreciates the quality of scouting and also transfer business the Bundesliga does, because the Bundesliga has only a fraction of that budget the Premier League clubs have and are still kind of, you know, unearthing and discovering these talents. Like Tapsuba, for instance, the centre-back, who might end up in the Premier League in next summer or maybe the year after.
Constantine, there's been some suggestion that Steiten is slightly more of a sort of technical director, you know, maybe that his strength is more in the kind of administrative areas of the game rather than the football kind of area. I mean, is that something you would agree with in terms of his role?
I mean, given his past, I think, yeah, that of course he is more of a scouting focused, talent recruitment focused type of guy. He isn't really a business person. But looking at some of the most successful sporting directors in Europe, usually the most successful ones are those who can really focus on recruitment, finding talents, finding the right coach, finding the right assistant staff, and so on and so on. And the business side of things can be done by real business people, right? They can work behind the scenes, do all the financial things, right? Maybe be part of negotiation when it comes to money. But after all, you usually have like someone who's really focused on finding the right talent. And I think that he has shown at Leverkusen, especially, I mean, where the Bremen time was kind of difficult because Bremen got relegated and they were struggling, right? They were fighting relegation and so on. It wasn't really a great time, I guess. But it was his club at the time. And he was really close to or really well connected to Bremen throughout his career. But at Leverkusen, he has, again, just like Leverkusen have done in the past, he has discovered a lot of interesting talents and also got a lot of value for the money they have spent. At Tapsoba, Piero Hinkepi, left back. These guys are just, I mean, you buy them as Leverkusen for comparatively, like in these days, comparatively little money, and they will sell them, especially like Tapsoba. He will be sold to a Premier League side for a lot of money. That's just, I mean, I'm very convinced by that. Or he will go to Spain, but he will be sold for a lot of money. So I think in terms of like getting a lot of value for your money, he's great. Of course, but you will be more more focused on recruitment and scouting, and also coordinating a scouting department, right? Getting all the pieces in place. But I also think, like looking at Brighton, for instance, right? Because Brighton are right now at the Premier League club who gets the most out of their money, in my opinion. Of course, they are in a comfortable situation because no one expecting from them like being qualified for the Champions League or something like that. But still, I think what you see at Brighton is you need someone, you need one or two people who can not only discover talents, but also think about the structure and how you set up the scouting department, how you set up the entire network, how you set up an agency network, basically like how you are connected to the agents and so on and so on. I think that's sometimes more important than anything else. And I think Steiten is very good at that. And he also has already a good network in Central Europe and also in Latin America. So, and that's something that could also help Tottenham. And if he goes to the people he already knows and says, I was at Bayer Leverkusen, I signed a couple of good players there, right? I signed your client, agent X, Y, and Z. Now I'm at Tottenham. I got more money. I got Daniel Levy, who would be willing to spend more money. Let's make another good few deals. Why not? I mean, a guy like him, like I think he's just in a very good spot right now in this world. And also there's no history, he has no baggage or something, right? There's nothing. He was a fourth division player in Germany, so there's nothing, right? He's just a pretty blank sheet of paper, other than that he has discovered already good talents and has done a tremendous job at Leverkusen. Just one point to add: the reason he has left Leverkusen in March is because he decided he wants to go to another club, to a bigger one, or to a club that has more financial resources, or maybe a bit more of a higher standing at Leverkusen and can sign better talent. And he decided, I go early before the summer, so I'm not getting into any conflicts in terms of transfer business. I'm not part of Leverkusen's transfer business because these are their secrets. I don't want to go to another club. And I think that's applaudable to think like that. I mean, it might not be the most ruthless thing, right? Ruthless would be like, oh, just staying in Leverkusen and like writing down who they want. But I think from a character point of view, from a character standpoint, I think it's plausible to do that, because you see he's someone you should be doing this business with when you are an agent or another club, because he plays by the rules.
Yeah, that is admirable. And it does sound as though he ticks a lot of boxes. I'm aware that you've probably got a giant pint of lager somewhere nearby because you're in Germany. I don't want to hold you back from that. One final question, Constantine, because you did mention it a little earlier, the connection between Harry Kane and Bayern Munich, which we heard a fair bit about. Now, of course, we all know that, or we all think at least, that one of Kane's biggest priorities is to become the Premier League's all-time leading goal scorer, which is why there's a general feeling that if he does leave Spurs, it would be for another Premier League side. But bearing in mind the negotiations that have gone on in the past and Bayern's desperate need for a player like Kane, do you think it is still possible that he could end up in the Bundesliga?
I think it's still possible. I also think the likelihood was greater last summer, in a sense, because Lewandowski left. Bayern were kind of looking for the next, you know, the next attacking player. They ended up signing Sadio Mane, which at the time, I think many people thought like, oh, that's a great move, right? They are signing Sadio Mane, arguably the best or the second best attacking player Liverpool have had for, in the past, I don't know, 5-6 years, right? I mean, you can argue who has better, Salah or Mane. That's a discussion for another day. Didn't work out. But at the time, I thought like, all right, if they don't get Mane, maybe they break the bank and try to get Harry Kane. Of course, getting Harry Kane, it would be very costly. I mean, it would cost a lot of money, to be honest. And also, now that maybe Paris Saint-Germain or other clubs, maybe, I don't know, Manchester United are in the running for Harry Kane, I don't think Bayern are really fond of going into competing with Paris and even United in terms of just transfer fees and all and overall financial package that you can offer a player, because Bayern might have a lot of money, but they are never going out as a gunslinger and never try to, you know, like throw all their money at a player and just go for it, because as you just saw, they spent a considerable amount of money to sign Mane. I mean, the transfer fee was only 30 million or a little bit less than that when you count it in pounds. But they pay him over 300,000 pounds a week in wages. So, I mean, still, like, they have, you know, allocated a lot of money to Mane, and it hadn't really worked out. And they actually are kind of considering selling him if there's a club that actually wants him. I still think they wouldn't go all out and like offer 150 million or so for Harry Kane. I have to say one thing. I think also what I gathered from people at Munich, and also what my general feeling is, that Harry Kane is also considered a great representative of your club, right? He's like kind of a player. If he's like the face of your team, basically, right? That's a good thing. I think a lot of people see him like that. So from a PR standpoint, and just from, you know, that's our front man, that's our striker, Harry Kane. He's on a big large poster in Munich, or maybe in Shanghai, right, or in New York, advertising Bayern Munich. I think that's sometimes also intriguing when it comes to Harry Kane, that you want him basically as the face of your franchise or the face of your company, your team. From that point of view, of course, he's intriguing, but I think Bayern might be pivoting more to like a Victor Osimhen from Napoli, who once played in the Bundesliga at Wolfsburg, and I don't know if he played like 10 games or so, because he was let go and like for nothing, and now he's worth probably 100 million. But also making deals with Napoli, good luck with that. Their chairman is something else.
Wow, a chairman who's something else. What does that remind me of? Listen, Constantine.
I didn't want to draw the comparison.
Thank you so much for joining us on Man's Day in Germany, giving us some wonderful insight into Lonzo, Tim Steichen and the possibility of Harry going. He's not. We're not going to let him go. I'm sorry. He's staying forever and ever. But
there are
thank
laws
you
against
so
that,
much.
By the way, Marcus. Okay? There are laws against it. Just keeping him against his will.
We don't care. We have special laws in North London that allow people to be kept beyond their will. That's how we've had it for so
South
much.
London, where the special laws are enforced.
I apologise to all our South London listeners for, but you're absolutely right. Yes. Yeah, Constantine, right. Thank you. Thank you so much. And enjoy Man's Day and the rest of the season. And hopefully you can join us again on the podcast sooner rather than later. Well, some wonderful detailed information there, Tom, from Constantine with regards to Nagelsmann, to Alonso. Tim Steichen, if I'm getting his name right, sounds as though he could tick a lot of boxes. Harry Kane to Bayern Munich. Well, what I'm more concerned about at the moment, if there is any inkling of that happening, Tom, is that it would mean that Saturday's home game against Brentford potentially will be Harry Kane's last home game as a Spurs player. How are we all going to feel as we walk him or watch him walk out of the tunnel again with that proud look on those chiseled features of his? We've got to accept that it is a possibility.
Yeah, it's a possibility. That is true. I think all eyes will be on his sort of his body language at the end of the match. Everyone will be, particularly in the press box, will be looking out for any particularly significant looking waves or, any sort of tears in the eyes, anything like that. Of course, it is a possibility. I mean, it feels a strange one because we're, a week or two from the end of the season. The main narratives kind of feel like they're elsewhere, not at Spurs Brentford. But it would be a huge thing, obviously, if this is Kane's last performance in front of his own fans. I think we remember in 2021 when Spurs played at home against Villa, I think was their last home game of the season. There was some sort of suggestion that Kane was kind of waving and doing a lap of honour at the end. It's always difficult because the last game of the season, a lot of players do that. They look for their family in the stands and they sort of, blow kisses and walk around the pitch. So it's hard to kind of differentiate between what looks like a farewell and what is just kind of a traditional end of season routine. But yeah, it is possible. I personally think it's not going to happen. I think Spurs will hold on to Kane. I think we've discussed this before in detail. I think they will probably do the market value of Harry Kane compared to Tottenham's value of Harry Kane. The gap will be too much there. And what we hear is that United are very much interested in him. They will push, they will approach. But whether they have the stomach for a fight is a different thing. And the suggestion is that they're not keen to spend the whole summer negotiating with Daniel Levy over what is likely to be a very inflated price. So then the question is, how does Kane handle it? If he wants to leave Spurs and he wants to kind of push that way, how hard does he push? And that kind of remains to be seen. And that, I think we're still sort of waiting to find out, his position in that regard. But it was interesting the kind of the take from Constantine about sort of Bayern and their view of Kane as a sort of a model professional and someone who could front the club. I think that's particularly relevant for a club like Bayern, who very much put a high value on that kind of thing. But I think, Kane has always said he wants to remain in England. That Premier League record is huge for him. I do think a move abroad would suit Spurs. It would suit the club almost. They could take the money and not have the flak of having to watch Kane play for another Premier League team. But I don't think it will suit Harry Kane.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And just in terms of the mathematics, Dan and I touched upon it after the reaction pod following the defeat at Aston Villa last week. But we've already discussed Brighton again, who will play Newcastle shortly after we complete this recording. But just looking at the table, I remain absolutely adamant that Spurs must qualify for Europe if at all possible, be it the Europa League or more likely now the Europa Conference League. I have not got an issue with that. And it seems to me that if we beat Brentford, a Ivan Tony-less Brentford, of course, following the breaking news of Wednesday, looking at Aston Villa's last two games, away to Liverpool and then at home to Brighton, it looks as though we will get a Conference League play. So it makes this Brentford game really important. But I think Europa League looks as though it could be out of our reach now with all those games in hand that Brighton have. Are you happy? Are you one of those happy to go into the Conference League, if that's what it is?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like Brighton have, they've got they have got a difficult run in, but then the combination of the games they have in hand, the lead and the fact that they just thrashed Arsenal away suggests that they might even take points from some of those difficult games. So it does look difficult now to get in the Europa League. And I think that is a blow for Spurs. You know, I think Europa League would have been a really good competition for them to be in next season. It's the kind of tournament they could win if they took seriously. It would be, I think, an easier route to the Champions League than finishing in next season's top four, which is going to be a difficult ask for any team. I think that is a blow for them. I agree. I think Spurs will just hold on. It's difficult because Villa are sort of the informed team. Spurs are definitely not informed, but I think Villa are just running out of road. If they had maybe one or two more games, I would think they would finish above Spurs. But I think Spurs have with the extra couple of goals in terms of the goal difference, with the fixtures, I think they will probably just hold on. Whether that's a good thing or not, I'm with you, Marcus. I tend to think that Spurs are not in a position to be turning down any opportunity to win a trophy. And yes, the Conference League is even a significant step down now from the Europa League. No doubt about that in terms of the opposition, in terms of the prestige of the tournament, the prize money, what's on offer if you win it. It's definitely not going to be a sort of a particularly persuasive stick for someone like Harry Kane. But equally, you know, I think if they can make a good run to the semi-finals, the final, if they could win the tournament, then I think, you know, that is something that Tottenham should be looking to do. They should be looking to build a sort of winning mentality, a habit of winning trophies, get this kind of trophy thing off their back. I see it as 100% a positive thing. I do think the gap between finishing seventh and the Conference League and not having any European football, I think, is less. Like, if they didn't have anything, I think it's not there are obvious positives to that, which I think have been mentioned elsewhere. But I do think it's still something they should definitely be looking to do.
Well, I also think that whoever comes in as manager, and I want to talk to you about one man just before we go in a moment, but whoever comes in, if they are in the Conference League, it does give that manager an opportunity to win a trophy in his very first season, which, bearing in mind what's happened for the past 20-odd years, would be quite something. It would be a stepping stone. I always think back to many years ago when George Graham actually took over at Arsenal, and he won the League Cup in his first season, and that got Arsenal into the habit of winning trophies again. And of course, we know what he went on to achieve during his years in charge there. So I think it would be a great opportunity. That could be somebody just ringing up to try and get the Spurs job as well. I'm part of the advisory panel. It might be Arnie Slot. And I just want to ask you about him, because I read in some detail what he did at AZ Alkmaar and, of course, what he's just done most impressively at Feyenoord. I looked at his tactical nous. He's, by all accounts, very much sort of in the Pochettino mould when it comes to setting up a team, plays, quotes, the Tottenham way. And I noticed yesterday in particular quite a few Spurs fans being sort of, if not won over, certainly interested in him all of a sudden. And he's barely had a proper mention up until the past two or three days. So it would seem as though maybe his PR team are doing a good job as well. Could he be the answer to our long-term quandary, do you think?
I think it's interesting because we always, when managers are kind of being talked about, there's always a very high kind of value put on the excitement factor of what a coach will, whether they'll energise the fans and whether the name is something that everyone's going to get hugely enthusiastic about. And obviously that would have been the case with Nagelsmann, for example. It was the case with Conte. But then the football starts, you know, and actually that is the most important thing. You know, it's not about what happens over the summer and whether everyone is hugely excited going into the new season. It's about how Tottenham play in those first five games. It's about how they do next season. It's about how, you know, whether this connection we've talked about before can be reestablished with the supporters. And ultimately that is the most important thing, you know, and I think someone like Slot, I don't think he'll do the former very much. He won't necessarily be a big name that everyone's going to get hugely excited about. But if he can be the kind of coach who builds this Tottenham team slowly, like Pochettino did, for example, in 2014, when actually, as well, everyone was very disappointed to have missed out on Louis van Gaal. And everyone thought, blimey, why are we hiring this, you know, this fellow who can't really speak English and has only spent a season and a half at Southampton? But then very quickly, within the first few weeks and months, you know, people thought, actually, you know, think something is building here. And that there's no reason why that can't happen with someone like Slot. I'm not going to claim to be an expert on his work in the Netherlands, but he is talked of very highly. I think at this point, Spurs are still in that process of sounding managers out. They are moving forward in this process. But, you know, I was speaking to someone yesterday, and they, you know, the idea is that everything is being done very methodically, meticulously, carefully. And there's a slight irritation, I think, from within the club that people are sort of assuming that either nothing is happening or that nobody has any idea what they're doing at the club just because nothing is being announced and nothing is being played out publicly. And they say, look, the process is happening. They're working their way towards appointing who they think will be the best manager at the end of the season. And just because we don't all know and see, you know, who's being interviewed, that doesn't mean that isn't happening in the proper way. Now, obviously, I think, you know, the backdrop to this is what happened in 2021. The trust at the moment is at its lowest point. There is no trust in Daniel Levy to carry out any football decision currently and come to the correct answer, given what's happened over the last two or three years. So that is the problem that they have in that regard. But at the moment, they're at the stage where basically after losing Nagelsmann, you know, whether you think they lost him or he lost them, they are now going through the sort of four or five candidates who they are keen on. They're meeting their representatives at least, and with a view to interviewing and appointing at the end of the season. Slot is definitely one of those candidates. Ruben Amorim is one of those. I was told that Luis Enrique is still very much in the frame and even emerging as perhaps, you know, one of the favoured candidates again. You know, and De Zerbi obviously is in there as well. You know, and these are the managers they're thinking about. They're working out if they will satisfy the club's sort of criteria in terms of money and contracts. And then they will speak to them in a more advanced way at the end of the season. That's where they're at the moment. Slot is definitely in the frame. There's no doubt about that. Feyenoord want to keep him. They want to offer him a new deal. He's very keen on the move, I think, and he would snatch at the chance to work in the Premier League.
Yeah, interesting. We seem to go round and round, and hopefully behind them, they do know what they're doing. Although it is strange that, you know, they're going to perhaps appoint director of football. It's Tottenham. Anything goes. Tom Allnutt of The Times, as always, thank you very much indeed. Thanks to Constantine for joining us a little bit earlier. Thank you for listening. Don't forget that you can follow us in all the usual ways. You can give us a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, we're on Twitter, on Instagram, at The Tottenham Way. Love to hear from you. All your thoughts, the reactionary pods that we've been doing. Thanks for a lot of really positive reactions to those, and we shall continue to do them. I'm not sure which of us will be on duty after the game at Brentford on Saturday. Into that, and we'll all be back next week ahead of the final game of what has been a tumultuous season. But for now, for me, Marcus Buckland, it's goodbye and come on, you Spurs.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.